This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. The big story this week, another groundbreaking legal victory for advocates of gay marriage. A federal appeals court in Boston rules that the Defense of Marriage Act is unconstitutional.
We believe that this is a great day for Massachusetts, for civil rights, and for all same-sex couples in Massachusetts who are married or who will be.
Also this week, Elizabeth Warren tries again to settle questions about her Native American ancestry.
And on the eve of the state's Democratic convention, she already gets an endorsement from Governor Deval Patrick.
As Democrats, we're lucky to have two strong candidates competing for the party's nominee for United States Senate. I wish them both well. But I am with Elizabeth Warren.
Also, Kurt Schilling versus Governor Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island and the Ocean State's bad bet on the video game industry.
Well, hope springs eternal, but it does look bleak. Just the worst investment that's ever been made, I think, in the history of Rhode Island.
From the downfall of 38 studios to the city of Woonsocket on the brink of fiscal collapse, it was another week of economic distress for Rhode Island's struggling economy. We're going to dig into all of those stories now in our Week in Review, and joining us is Garrett Quinn. He's a contributor to Reason Magazine and author of the Less is More blog at Boston.com. And Garrett, great to see you back.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Also, joining our Week in Review panel for the first time, Scott McKay. He's a veteran reporter from the great state of Rhode Island, a news analyst at Rhode Island Public Radio in Providence. And Scott, great to have you with us. As my grandfather, a naval guy, used to say, welcome aboard.
Thank you so much, Anthony. It's great to be here.
All right. Good to be here. So let's start with the big decision yesterday by the First Circuit Court of Appeals in Boston. The court ruled unanimously that the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, which defines marriage as a union between one man and one woman, is unconstitutional. The court took issue with a part of the law that denies federal benefits like Social Security and the ability to file joint tax returns to married gays and lesbians. Here's Attorney General Martha Coakley, who brought suit against DOMA.
It's a discriminatory law. It's just plain unfair, and there's no real reason for it.
So Garrett, the ruling protects gays and lesbians who want to marry legally. It also protects, or at least supports, the idea that the states have the power to determine for themselves how their marriage laws should work. How do you think this pushes the debate over same-sex marriage forward?
Well, I think it's been pretty clear for a couple of years now that gay marriage is something that's here to stay in the United States. It's slowly going to – it's going to take a little longer, in particular in states where they've passed constitutional amendments barring it or defining marriage as a union between a man and a woman. But I think this sets us up for that epic battle in the Supreme Court that will take place later on. God knows when that'll happen, but this is just another step towards that ultimate decision.
Showdown at the Supreme Court. Scott, gay marriage legal everywhere in New England except Rhode Island. How does this decision affect the debate in your state, for example?
Well, the debate in Rhode Island is very demographic. You look at it, age, all the public polling and public opinion surveys show that younger people think it's fine, and that some older people do not. Now, we have a very vocal Roman Catholic bishop, Thomas Tobin, and he has been lobbying very, very, very vigorously at the State House and on the airwaves and in the newspapers and everywhere in the state to make sure that the legislature did not approve gay marriage. So what happened last year is Governor Chafee, an independent, supports marriage equality. The House Speaker, Gordon Fox from Providence, is openly gay himself. He supports it. However, the Senate President, a woman named Teresa Piva-Weed from Newport, sides with the bishop on this issue, and she has in her chamber in the Senate some conservative Catholic legislators. So what happened was is Rhode Island passed a civil union bill, which made no one happy. The bishop was still upset with them, and of course the marriage equality people said, wait a minute, you know, that was okay in 2000 when Vermont was the first state in the country that did it, but now that eight states have gay marriage, particularly our neighbors in New England here, Massachusetts, Connecticut, you know, what are you doing? I mean, why does Rhode Island always have to be New England's third world country and be backward? And so the debate here continues. The legislature only has about 2 weeks left in the session, so I don't think it's going to happen this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if next year there's a serious debate on elevating our civil union bill to full marriage equality.
To a full gay marriage bill. Well, the decision yesterday ultimately leaves the question about the constitutionality of DOMA. I mean, it says it's a question that the Supreme Court is going to have to settle. So the center of gravity on the court, somewhat conservative, but the thrust of yesterday's decision seems to be sort of in support of federalism. So Garrett, you know, what do you think this means? Where does the Supreme Court come down on this, if and when, and it's more a question of when, it takes it up finally?
Well, I think the question of when is the bigger one that needs to be – it's the big wild card here, because it all a lot of how the court will rule on this will depend on the makeup of the court. You've got a handful of justices that – well, I'd say three that may or may not be on the court in the next couple of years, particularly depending on the outcome of the 2012 election. Given the makeup of the court right now, I'm really not sure how Anthony Kennedy – you figure you have 4-4 and then mm-hmm. Kennedy's going to be the swing vote. I'm really unsure of how Anthony Kennedy would rule on this question. It's really hard to tell. Of coin toss, I guess.
What do you think, Scott? I know predicting how Supreme Courts will rule on anything is a difficult business. What's your gut tell you?
Well, if we're from Rhode Island, we'd take book on it if we thought we could. If we thought we could predict those things. Look, a couple of things jump out at you. First of all, there's some prickly points here, and the court avoided the two of the most contentious. First of all, the judges did not address that segment of DOMA, which says that states without same-sex marriage are not required to recognize unions performed in other states. And they also didn't offer an opinion on whether same-sex marriage should be constitutionally protected. So there's an awful lot of legal issues here. I would caution, though, the people on the marriage equality side. Sometimes in a democracy, if things come down from judicial edict, people don't accept it as much as if it gets voted in. And I'll tell you, one of the problems the marriage equality folks do have is that there's been about 30 referenda around the country on this various permutations of this issue, you know, defining marriage as between a man and a woman, or voting down, repealing, mm-hmm. A same-sex marriage bill as happened in Maine. And every single time it gets put to a vote, no matter what the polling shows, and it's been close in a couple states, Maine and California, believe it or not, very close. However, not once has the pro-gay marriage side won a referendum.
Well, let's move on to the race for the U.S. Senate and the controversy around Elizabeth Warren's Indian heritage. This week, she told the Boston Globe that, in fact, she told Harvard and the University of Pennsylvania to claim her as part Native American. There's still no evidence that she gained anything by doing this, but the controversy continues. Garrett, is it time to let this story drop and move on, or does Elizabeth Warren still have questions that she needs to clear up?
Even if the story is dropped, it's going to come up again later in the fall when there are debates. It's really hard to there's still some questions, I think, that need to be answered about this. And what we're starting to see, too, is there's this drip of more stories coming out. The bigger story here, I think, ultimately, is how she handled this in the beginning. If she had just come out, held a press conference, aired all the questions, aired everything, it would have gone away. But instead, the way the campaign reacted to it has led to this just dragging on and on and on and on and on.
What do you think, Scott? You've looked at campaigns for many years. How does this story appear to you?
Well, obviously, the cover-up, or the so-called cover-up here, is much worse than the crime. I mean, it doesn't look really like she did very much, but she didn't handle it well.
Exactly.
And for Scott Brown, this is a great thing for him, because every time there's another drip of this Chinese water torture story on Warren, they have to refer to the fact that she's a Harvard professor and she taught at the University of Pennsylvania. And I think Brown is trying to brand himself as this everyman guy with the pickup truck, all that nonsense, and that she's an elitist Ivy Leaguer. And this just, every time this thing's in the paper, every time it's on television, yet again, there's Elizabeth Warren defined not as the person who came from a modest background, who did this consumer protection thing in Washington, who cares about the middle class. She's once again defined as an elite Ivy League professor.
And obviously, Garrett, as Scott says, obviously all this is helpful to Senator Scott Brown, right?
Yes, but Brown has to play his cards right if he doesn't want this to blow up in his face. He doesn't want to come across as a birther, if you will, when it comes to this situation. He doesn't want to come across as a crank, and he wasn't come across as harsh. He sort of walked that line when he was talking about this earlier this week in Springfield, when he brought up the issue of his parents not telling him things that his parents telling him things that weren't always true. I think so far Brown and his campaign have played this story and played this gift that was given to them pretty well. Warren did go up with a huge ad buy while the story was going on, and that helped her, and Brown didn't respond quickly and really go after her with that. But so far, they've played this, I think, fairly well to their fairly much to their advantage.
Well, look, Brown has got the best thing that can ever happen in a campaign. He's got the media doing his work for him. And as long as that is going to be you know, this is going to be the flavor of the week, the story of the day. Well, Brown can just keep quiet, yeah. keep greeting and meeting and greeting people and doing his TV buys and letting the media chop Warren up on this issue.
And Scott, the other thing too, I agree with you there too. But this the way this has also helped Brown is it's totally wiped out Warren's ability to get her message out. She can go and talk about consumer advocacy and
Precisely.
J.P. Morgan and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, it's been for the last month and a half, 6 weeks, whatever, 7th week. I don't know how long the story's been going. It feels like it's been going on forever.
But April 27th.
Yeah, but all we've been talking about is, did Elizabeth Warren lie about her American Indian heritage to get ahead in life? And that sort of dominated the discussion.
Okay, well, we have a little tiny bit of news that I just want to drop into this. Toward the end of our show, I'm going to say in about a half hour from now, we have been promised Elizabeth Warren. So we're going to hear directly from her. That's the plan anyway. We can't swear that that's going to happen, but so far that's what her campaign is promising us, so stay tuned. In the meantime, let's move on to two stories out of Rhode Island. And Scott, you were on our air a couple of times this week talking about the meltdown of Kurt Schilling's 38 Studios. He had to lay off some 400 employees. We learned today from the Boston Globe that he poured much of his personal fortune into that Providence-based company, including $5 million in gold coins. Scott, this story has huge political repercussions in Rhode Island. What's the latest? What are you seeing down there?
Well, right now, what the governor has done, Governor Chafee, don't forget, Chafee was against this deal.
That's right.
He inherited this from former Governor Don Carcieri, a conservative Republican who was a friend or a faux friend, whatever you want to call it. He was an acquaintance of Schilling. And they both agree, they're both conservatives, Republicans, they met at a fundraiser, they both were big supporters of President Bush. And Schilling got this deal from Governor Carcieri as Carcieri was headed out of office. Chafee went and campaigned against it. He went to the Economic Development Corporation here in Rhode Island and said, please, it's August of 2010, we're going to elect a new governor in 3 months. Please just delay this until a new governor comes in. And Carcieri refused. So now we're stuck with this thing. And whatever Schilling says about Chafee and blames him, here's the truth. 17 months elapsed before Chafee or anybody said a word, and Kurt Schilling could not find an investor to come up with the money he needs to develop his video games. Now, whatever you think of Kurt Schilling, and you'd have to have like the heart of a loan shark not to feel bad for him at this point, because he put some money in it, he put some sweat in it. But, you know, this guy is untested. You don't get a fastball. You know, you throw a fastball, doesn't mean you have an MBA from Harvard. He has no business track record.
Yeah.
It was one of these foolish celebrity kind of jock investments the state made. And, you know, he only came to Rhode Island, don't forget, because Massachusetts Governor Patrick was too smart to get involved in this thing. You know, the Mass Economic Development people were willing to help Schilling with the kind of traditional economic incentives a state can give, tax breaks, those kinds of things.
And Garrett, is that the lesson here for Massachusetts, that don't invest, don't pick winners and losers in the way that Rhode Island did? Massachusetts has done it too. Let's not forget. But what's the lesson that comes out of this?
If you go on Kurt Schilling's website, Studio 38 Studios, and read the description of the new game he's making, Copernicus. And I don't know how much of a gamer you guys are, but it sounds like every single RPG fantasy game that's ever been made. And if the government doesn't know a lot about the internet, and one thing that's pretty clear in this is, by picking winners and losers, they're just putting out another crappy ripoff of World of Warcraft that didn't need to be made. This was a terrible mistake for the state of Rhode Island, and Massachusetts looks very smart for letting Schilling go down 95 and set up shop there, because this was a loser idea. Proposal from the get-go. Terrible, terrible decision by state.
Just to follow up on that real quickly, a government, I would argue, is good at setting the conditions for economic development. Mm-hmm. And it's been that way since John Adams built the lighthouses along the New England coast in the 1790s. I mean, it was government subsidies that built the Transcontinental Railroad, the interstate highways, the internet was conceived by the government, not Al Gore, as we know. And I think that the problem is, it's great. You know, the state universities were created by government, the 1862 Morrill Act, and you need an educated workforce. But the problem is, when you go the next step and the government starts to pick winners and losers in the marketplace, in other words, the government ought to set the conditions
right.
for economic growth, but not get into the business
the government doesn't have the information or the knowledge base to make decisions like this. It just doesn't.
You're right.
We're running out of time in this segment, but Scott, before we let you go and say goodbye, I want to talk to you a little bit about Wound Socket. This is another story about economic distress coming out of Rhode Island. This week, the state set up a special budget commission to oversee the city of Wound Socket's budget crisis. Among the problems, the city's school department is broke. Its bond rating is down to junk bond status. This is the third Rhode Island city, along with East Providence and Central Falls, now under state oversight. Scott, what's going on?
Well, here's what's happening in Rhode Island. Two of the three cities you mentioned, East Providence, not so much, but Central Falls and Woonsocket are perfect examples of old, faltering textile mill towns that just never found any new industry to take over. Woonsocket's been a seen better days community for a long time now. It's the only city in Rhode Island that has lost population in every U.S. census for 60 years. It was once this big textile mill center. Don't forget, it's up in there in the Blackstone Valley where the American Industrial Revolution started. But boy, ever since then, it's just been one thing after another. The only thing they really have is CVS, the big drugstore chain. Mm-hmm. CVS does have its headquarters in Woonsocket. But other than that, it's got very little business base. There's not much economic development there. The housing crisis has hit big time there. A lot of foreclosures. It's just not a community that has a lot of wealth, and they have some internal political problems, and the mayor was fighting with the school superintendent, kind of the same old story. But really, the structural problem there is just, it's another old New England city that's struggling.
Well, we're sorry to hear that. Wish everybody well down there. Obviously, big economic challenges. We've got time now to move on to our hubbub, that story that ran below the fold, didn't get the attention that it deserved perhaps this week. Magna, what's your hubbub?
So continuing in my passion for animal-themed hubbubs, a few weeks ago I did ferrets. This week it's turkeys. Now, while turkeys are quite an amusing animal, this is kind of a cautionary, serious tale more than anything. Because in a lot of neighborhoods around Greater Boston, wild turkeys are making an emergence. I happen to live in one where a turkey just roosts on the fence across the street from us.
I know, what is it about Brookline?
The
Well, they're pretty loud when it comes to gobble gobble, and you learn that they like shiny things. But at Mount Auburn Cemetery, now here's where it gets serious. In Cambridge, as of February, at least a pair of wild turkeys decided to take up residence there. So you learn to live with them. They're part of nature. They're part of our environment, especially here in New England. But the problem was that people started feeding them at the cemetery. Uh-oh. So that made them incredibly, at least one of them, one of the toms, incredibly aggressive. And ultimately, it sent someone to the hospital after attacking them. So they had to euthanize the turkey.
Time for the oven.
I was going to say, I hope
turkey
baster. I hope someone got a good Thanksgiving dinner out of
it. It's good that it's not November, I suppose. But I guess the truth is, it's once again one of those lessons, and we have to be cautious in how we share this world with animals that are moving back into the places that they used to live.
Garrett Quinn, your hubbub.
I've been mourning the loss of, the impending loss of WFNX, the alternative rock station that's been around since about a year before I was born. And there's a group of guys that are putting together a documentary about the station, and it's sort of about its demise, called We Want the Airwaves, the story of WFNX. I believe they just released the trailer, and they're going to show it, I think, June 30th at the Paradise. So I highly recommend you guys to check that out. It's We Want the Airwaves, the story of WFNX.
A venerable institution that will be missed by many, no doubt. Scott McKay, that leaves you finally for this week's hubbub.
Well, mine comes from across the pond, and we haven't heard much about it this week, but we will by next week if this trend continues. The survival of the euro, the continent's common currency, is really at stake. And I think that, the eurozone has 17 heads of government, 17 parliaments. It's hard to put this together. Spain, everybody, we've heard Greece, we've heard a lot about this, but I don't think that people realize that the European currency is the real basis in that whole system they set up for European unity. And I don't think anybody in the United States or anywhere in the world wants to go back to the early and mid parts of the 20th century where European disunity caused an awful lot of bloodshed for an awful lot of people.
All right. Well, I'm going to go from a very global and worldly hubbub to a hyper-local one. In my native Somerville, this weekend, you can join Somerville Climate Action to depave the way. Now, what this is Somerville, turns out, is 75% paved over. So this Saturday, you can join Somerville Climate Action. You can pick up a sledgehammer, pick up a pickaxe. They'll give you a hard hat, and you can pry up asphalt, smash up concrete, and cart it away and return Somerville to its earthy nature, original nature, I guess. Sounds like a
get it ready
fun.
For the turkey.
Sounds very something Somerville would do.
It does sound like something that our beloved Somerville will do. Scott McKay, news analyst at Rhode Island Public Radio, thank you so much for joining us today, and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
And Garrett Quinn, contributor to Reason Magazine and author of the Less is More blog at Boston.com. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here, guys.
Well, stay with us, because up next, from Boston to Bonnaroo, we'll listen to the band The Blind Woods. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.